bit. And I had the pleasure of meeting her at another meeting called Zoom on Recovery. And I affectionately call it the Legendary House of Zior, which I love the name of this meeting. And every time she shares, I really hone in on what she's saying because she seems to have a real powerful message. So, with no further ado, I hope I don't give you too much embarrassment, Lisa. I'm turning it over to you. This is Lisa from New York City, and thank you so very much for sharing and go.
Thank you, Michael, and thank you to the group for having me. my name is Lisa. I'm an addict.
Hi,
Hi, Lisa.
Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Hey, family. Yeah, I will try to live up to that introduction. So yeah, just a little bit about myself. Excuse me, I'm a bit nervous, but I'll trudge on. I am originally from the South, the Southern US rather. A very different culture than where I live today. I grew up, it's a very masculine culture. It's very macho. I don't even think like macho is the right word for it. It's the masculinity is the patriarchal sort of vibes are just kind of baked into the culture, So anyway, as a child, I was not very masculine, and I was I was assigned to the male gender at birth. So I was not very masculine. I tried to be masculine. I tried very hard, but it did not come naturally to me. I used to cop resentments, what I now know are resentments, I didn't know at the time, against anyone who was like effortlessly masculine, which of course, like a lot of men are. They just like they don't have to try to be masculine, they just are. That's, but so I was resentful of those people. I never understood why I wasn't like them. Once I got into my teens, I somehow I gained the belief that having sex is what makes one masculine. If one is a man, then having sex is a good thing. It's the most manly thing you can do is having sex with a woman, right? And so like with that in mind, with like that being like what my disease brain came up with as a fix for how I feel. From the second the very first time I had sex, I was like on a rampage. I was having sex like as many times as I possibly could, with literally anyone who well, 99% of them were women, and every now and then there would be a man that I would have sex with. But I was always like in denial about that. Like I would do it and then be in denial that I had done it or that I had enjoyed it. Anyway, so yeah, I felt like I wasn't enough. I felt like I wasn't masculine enough. This thing that I had envisioned was a cure wasn't working because it never made me feel like a man. How it, whatever that means. and it wasn't, I mean, I actually started using drugs before I was sexually active, but like I think going into my mid-teens, late teens, it's like the drugs and the sex were like how I regulated my emotions. Those two things were like how I felt okay every day. If I didn't have those things, I did not feel okay. If I did, I thought I felt okay. What was actually happening was I was just numbing what I did feel. But like when you're in a certain amount of pain, like, any sort of numbness to that is a blessing, I believe. Yeah, so but like just like sex with drugs, it was very obvious to me. Well, it wasn't obvious in the beginning, right? Okay, so like in the beginning, I'm like, meeting some friends after school, we're getting high in the parking lot, or somebody's uncle gave them a bottle of alcohol and like, some shit like that. But like as the years went on, drugs and alcohol became, sorry, alcohol is a drug, so drugs became easier to access. And so at that point, like I was just using all the time. Well, whenever I had the money to do so, which was whenever I could. But my friends weren't like that. My friends were the ones who would want to, like, get high in the parking lot after school, or like share a bottle of vodka between 10 people on a weekend, Like looking back, they were the ones who were using like in a normal way. I mean, granted, in like a teenager's fucking around and being in trouble way. But like they were using in a normal way, and I did not use in a normal way. They would get some drugs and like go to a friend's house to a party or something to share with their friends, and like that was their normal thing. I would get drugs and I would go home where no one else was, so I didn't have to share my shit. And like recognizing that, already feeling like an outsider, but recognizing that made me feel even more like an outsider, because like, what do I want to do on a date? Like, it's a Saturday afternoon. What do I want to do? Well, I want to use. Well, unless I have someone who wants to use as much as I do, as often as I do, then why would I hang around them? Right? So, okay. Long story short, that led me from like having like a friend group, people I grew up with. I went from that within a couple of years to like barely ever seeing those people, and instead seeing like the people who used like I used. And of course, the people who used like I used, they used heavier drugs. And so I started using those heavier drugs. It all sort of, it just kept getting worse and worse. I was sent to rehab when I was like 25 years old, I think. And I was already doing a maintenance program, a taper program or whatever. That of course didn't actually work, because I wasn't tapering, because I didn't want to stop using. I just wanted to stop feeling withdrawals. So I went to rehab, and like I got through detox. It was a rough detox. And then like I left before like my time was up, and like I copped some drugs the same day that I left, because I didn't really, like I said, I didn't really want to stop using at the time. I just wanted to stop being in pain. when I was in that rehab was the first time I had ever like heard the message of Narcotics Anonymous, and I can't remember anything that was said in the H&I meeting that came in there. All I remember was thinking like, this is where I'm gonna come when things really get bad. And of course, things were already bad. I was already like homeless and in rehab. Like things were already very bad, but like in my addict brain, things weren't bad enough yet. So yeah, after I got out of rehab, like I said, I was homeless. My mother had kicked me out of the house that I grew up in, and she was in the process of selling the house. I had it, my mother believed that if I wasn't there anymore, like if I wasn't in the town that I lived in with all the access to the drugs, then I wouldn't be able to use the drugs, which is a sort of logic, I guess. She said I had an aunt and a cousin out in Arizona, which is on the other side of the country, very different culture, very different environment. It took me, what, like 5 days of driving to get there. So yes, she sent me out there, and my aunt, when I got there, I was staying with her, and she immediately knew that I was using, and she kicked me out after about a month after I got there. So there I was, homeless in a city where I didn't know anyone. But like, addicts aren't hard to find. So I found the addicts, and I used with them, and the culture was so shockingly different that I found myself in some very dangerous situations that wouldn't have occurred back home. And what I did for work at the time, we have what's called day labor, where like you show up at this place and they put you in a truck and they send you out to a job site, they hand you a shovel and they tell you to dig or something like that. And then at the end of the day, they're like, here's $50 cash. It's absolutely like bottom tier labor work, and is probably not entirely legal. But one of the people I met doing this day labor told me, "Hey, I live. You're homeless, right?" He said. I said, "Yeah." I was like, "I live in a halfway house, and it's you got a bed to sleep on. You got three warm meals a day. They're shitty meals, but they're hot meals. And all you got to do is go to a meeting every day." And I remembered meetings from being in rehab, and I was like, "Yeah, I could do that. That sounds great." And in that halfway house, spoilers, I did not stay clean the whole time. I did not get kicked out for whatever reason. I don't know why, but I didn't stay clean the whole time. What really mattered, though, is that I met someone there who had stopped using, who had lost the desire to use, and who had found a new way of to live. And this was crazy to me. At first, I was like, well, I mean, this guy wasn't an addict like I was an addict. And then I like started like hanging out with him and listening to his stories. And I'm like, yeah, this guy's been through the same shit I've been through. But now he's not using and he's got a good life. I mean, he was living in the halfway house, sure, but like he had a good job. He had like a girlfriend. Like his family like didn't hate him. And I still look on this guy as an inspiration, It's close to 20 years ago that I met him. But meeting him got me to the point where, like, not only did I want to stop using, but I believed it was possible. I didn't believe it was possible until I met someone who convinced me that it was possible just by their example. I kept going to meetings. When I got out of the halfway house, I moved in with a romantic partner, as one does in early recovery, which is not something one should do in early recovery, but it's what I did. Eventually, I was able to stay clean. What that looked like was, getting clean, picking up a 30-day tag, relapsing, picking up a 30-day tag, 60-day tag, then relapsing. Like, it was a long time, a long period of trying to quit and then relapsing. Even though I wanted to stop using and I believed it could be done. Like, it wasn't a straight line. Like, there was a lot of struggles there. I even many times I would like, I would get like a 30-day tag knowing I had used like the night before, because I didn't want to, like, because I was ashamed. Like, I didn't want people in the meeting, my friends, to know that I had used. And the reason I'm saying that is a lot of us have lied about our clean time in the past, and it's fine, because if we keep coming to meetings, if we keep trying, we will get clean, and the fact that we lied about our clean time doesn't actually matter at all. It was just a bump in the road. So I was able to get clean. And I met someone when I had about 8 months clean, and we were married a month later. Again, I'm not recommending this path for anyone. In like my first 2 or 3 years of recovery, I very quickly gained the job, the wife, the house, the fence, the dog, the yard. Like, I had all of that stuff. And I was like, great, yeah, this is proof that the program works, because I have all these things now. This is great. The program has worked. I am a success story. And that mentality led me to stop going to meetings, and stop calling my sponsor. Like, I always had a sponsor. And like, to tell the truth, I always like went to meetings, but like, if I go to like one meeting a month or like every other week or something, that's not enough. It's not enough for me. So like, my recovery was slipping, my attitudes were slipping, I was resentful. I was, my wife and I were fighting all the time. I had almost completely stopped going to meetings. And then she wanted to move to New York to be closer to her family. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so we moved to New York. And about a month after we got here, she said she wanted a divorce, which honestly, I can't blame her for. It was not a good marriage. We were not a good match. We got divorced. I moved to Queens into an apartment. Very shortly after that, I came out as transgender. And like New York is a very like liberal place. It's a very like, there are a lot of trans people here, but that does not mean New York is a safe place for trans people. It's not. No place is really. And in a meetings, even like, even meetings that I was like so comfortable in before I came out, I was not comfortable in them anymore because I felt so different. And I was convinced that I was different. And I mean, honestly, I was different, but not in any way that mattered, not in any way that's relevant to my staying clean. And so I, when I first moved to New York, like I got a sponsor, I did what they said. I got a sponsor, I got a home group. I had about 5 years clean at that time. After I came out, maybe within 6 months of that, I just stopped going to meetings because I stopped feeling safe. So I just didn't go to meetings at all. The next few years were pretty tough. I was homeless at one point. I had 2 kids in my previous marriage, and like access to them was like restricted from me. I eventually like I found a partner, someone that I wanted to marry. We never ended up getting married, but we moved in together and we lived together for 5 years. And but that whole time, because I wasn't going to meetings, I was not connected to Narcotics Anonymous. My recovery was slipping the whole time. My mental health was slipping the whole time. Towards the end, like I remember, I spent like all day every day just in front of my computer, like I was in front of the computer for work, but like also when I got done with that, like I would like my partner would be there like in the apartment with me, and I would like have my headphones on, staring at a computer screen instead of talking to them. Because like I felt so different. Like I felt like I was miserable, and I was isolating because I didn't want my misery to impact people. I didn't want them to see me miserable. And that just, the isolation made me even more miserable. And that situation, that it just kept getting worse and worse until one day, this was in the fall of 2019. One day, my disease whispered in my ear and said, "If you use, you'll feel better." And I was like, "Yes, that's it. That's the solution. That's it. That's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna use and I'm gonna feel better." And so I did. I picked up, but I didn't feel better. I just felt different. I immediately on picking up, like the particular drug that I picked up was one that most people consider pretty harmless. But in the hands of an addict, it's not harmless. I was immediately obsessed. I was acting compulsively. I would like, I like was so like I would like cop and then use and then flush everything else that's left. And then the next day I would cop again. That went on and on and on for several months, until I guess my partner just kind of got tired of my shit. January 9th, 2020, she sat me down and she said, "We should break up." And she was actually, well, she had already planned like a vacation. She was going to go out of town for 2 weeks starting like that weekend. So like here it was, like, my partner is going to be out of town. I'm going to be in the house all alone by myself. And she just broke up with me. So I'm really not accountable to anyone. And that scared the hell out of me. It really did. Because my first thought was like, well, to hell with this quote unquote harmless that I have been doing. I'm going to go to get some real shit. And that was so scary. That was so scary to me. At the time, I had been going to meetings, like online Zoom meetings where I could hide, where I could sit there with my camera off and not saying anything. I could put like a fake name in the box and, like, because I had got clean in Narcotics Anonymous before, I knew I could do it again, but I don't think I was really like serious about it until she broke up with me, because at that point I was scared. I was terrified. So she broke up with me on January 9th, 2020. My clean date is January 10th, 2020. From that day to this, I have not used, and it was not easy. It was not easy. I was going to Zoom meetings at the time, and also there was another platform like BlueJeans, I think it was called, something like that. And like, I started going to in-person meetings, and I started accumulating a little bit of clean time, 30 days here, 60 days there. And then the pandemic happened, and we were restricted to like only Zoom meetings. And I found this Zoom meeting called Zoom In on Recovery. That meeting is my home group now, and it has been since then. In that meeting, I met my sponsor, the man who became my sponsor, who helped me work the 12 steps and is now helping me work the traditions. I met several people who became my sponsees. Many of them actually call me. And like, what is it like now? Like, I don't have the wife, the girlfriend, the house, the car, the dog. I don't have all of that stuff. I don't have any of that stuff. I've got a cat. And honestly, I've never been happier. The reason I'm so happy, the reason this all works for me, is because I'm in a meeting almost every day. My Zoom meetings happen almost every day, and I have an in-person meeting I go to once a week. I have a sponsee who calls me every day. Every single day, I'm engaged with my recovery because I have sponsees that call me. I have a service commitment that's actually ending at the end of this month. I have held a service commitment since I had about 6 months clean. The service keeps me coming to. It keeps me coming and it keeps me engaged even when I don't want to be, because I don't want to let other people down. And thanks to that, I've got a what, 6 years and 16 days clean. And the first time I had this amount of clean time, I was like getting away from meetings. I was like stopping the whole recovery process for what I felt at the time were valid reasons. And now I know through my lived experience that there are no valid reasons. There's no valid reason for me to stop engaging with Narcotics Anonymous, especially now that Zoom is a platform that the meetings are online. Well, some of the meetings are online, and like it doesn't matter if I've had a bad day, if I look like shit, if I'm tired, I'm falling asleep. If I'm like, it doesn't matter. I can go to a meeting every single day, no matter what's going on. There's never any excuse for me to feel like I don't belong or like I'm not a part of. Like, I feel like that section of my life is just over. I will never believe that lie again. And I guess I can only say I wish it hadn't taken so much pain for me to get to this place, but it takes what it takes. Maybe this is the only path that could have possibly taught me all of these lessons. Anyway, thanks to the group for having me. Thanks, Michael, for inviting me. Yeah, that's all I got. I'm Lisa. I'm an addict.